Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast. I'm Pat Boyle from CSN Chicago, joined by Blackhawks insider, CSN Chicago, Tracy Myers. Tracy, are you ready to go?
I'm so glad to be back. I mean, seriously, that's not sarcasm. I'm thrilled to be covering hockey again. That was too long of an offseason.
It was a long offseason and a lot of changes for this team. And so it's made for training camp to be interesting in the first week. Let's start with, I think, the surprise. I think both you and I thought Alex DeBrincat, while he had an amazing year last year, led the OHL in scoring, that he's likely going to start in Rockford. Yeah. I will say this, they're putting an interesting spin on things early to give him an opportunity on that lottery line. What's your take on what you've seen from DeBrincat?
And everything I've seen thus far, it's been practices, it's been scrimmages and everything. So you take what you can out of those. There's certainly a comfort level with those three. There's not a ton of size on that line. That's a separate subject. But I would love to see these guys in a game. I have a feeling, just judging from what they were doing earlier today, that there's a good chance we'll see them tomorrow.
Right.
So I'm very interested to see. But there's no doubt. Coach Joe Quenneville has liked what he has seen with DeBrincat. I still think they need to be very careful with this whole thing. It's a tremendous transition from the OHL to the NHL. I don't know if he's Connor McDavid in that sense. You know, there's not many people who can make that leap as quickly, and I just don't know if they should put all this pressure and everything. Now, it could just be a heck of a look-see. You know, Alexander Fortin, mm-hmm. however we're pronouncing it, Americanizing it now, got one hell of a look last year.
Right.
He was here right up until almost the start of the season. And it could very well happen that they do the same with him before deciding, you know what, this is great, we love the potential, but let's send you down to Rockford. I still think that's the best idea for him out of the gate. But you've got the preseason. Take a look at this combo. You know, you see how far Schmaltz has come. Patrick Kane and he have a little chemistry working. So it's certainly worth a look.
What do you make of Schmaltz right now? Because we originally thought that he might get that left-wing spot with Kane.
Yeah.
You know, for right now, he's slotted as the center. Nisimov bumped down to the third line.
Mm-hmm.
You surprised at all that Schmaltz is getting this opportunity? And what have you heard from Joel about kind of the thinking behind Schmaltz as the second line center?
I'm surprised only in the fact that if there was anything that most of us penciled into our heads, other than once Saad came back that he and Jonathan Toews would be back together,
right,
we just assumed that it would be Anisimov and Kane because, you know, Kane's already lost one line mate. And,
right.
And, you know, now we're going to, hey, we're going to blow it up again for you. But maybe I shouldn't have been shocked. I guess I was surprised at how much Schmaltz has developed his game, just even from last spring. You know, this is a more confident kid coming in this year. And part of that is everything that he went through last year from the first time when he came up here where he was shell-shocked. And he admitted it. It was deer in the headlights of, wow, I don't know if this is going to work. Because, again, college to pros, that's a hell of a leap.
Yeah.
Going down to Rockford, getting a little bit more experience, getting a little more confidence, coming back up, getting thrown in with Kane and Panarin when Anisimov got hurt. I think all of that collective experience gained confidence for him. And so when he came in this year, started off well the first couple of days, got Coach Joe Quenneville's approval, and you saw the chemistry again right off the top with those guys. So I am surprised only because, there's very few things you could have penciled in entering this camp. Those two I thought were going to be it, but I'm very curious to see how this could work.
Yeah, and you bring up the Schmaltz and this year. I think he and Caro and Hartman to a degree and Hinostroza mm-hmm. are coming into this season not feeling so wet behind the ears and inexperienced and like, do I belong? Do I fit? It's exactly. Like, okay, you're going to fit. Mm-hmm. Hinostroza is another story of exactly how it's going to work out, but you're going to be a part of this team. It's a matter of exactly where. Last year, that wasn't the case. We didn't know exactly who was going to be mm-hmm. here and who was not. One thing that Schmaltz, you know, needs to improve on is a faceoff circle. You wrote about it, and so Charlie had some comments on it on csnchicago.com about faceoffs last year, 47.5%. That's all that the Hawks were winning draws, second worst in the NHL. Against Columbus, 61.7%. So it's got to be, don't put a lot into one preseason game, mm-hmm. but it has to be a point of emphasis for centermen other than Jonathan Toews to get better at winning draws, and also throwing in the wrinkle of the way the NHL is now going to officiate draws, which we saw in that first preseason game.
Yeah, that first of all, between those and the slashing calls, if this continues full in the regular season, and I don't think it will, it always tapers off, our game's going to be longer.
Yeah.
But as far as Schmaltz, and I was even thinking, let's say DeBrincat isn't there right at the start, and I still say that's probably the most likely move. Then you've got Sharp up there, possibly. He's got some experience taking draws himself, and Bowman mentioned that even in the offseason, as far as if those two were put together, that's another guy that you can go to if Schmaltz is struggling or what have you. But there's no doubt, this is a point of concern. It was last year. You know, Anisimov has to get better in that category, too. As much as people talk about Kruger overpaid and everything, especially before the wrist injury, he was great at this. He was right up there with Toews.
Right.
So it's going to be a work. It's going to be a work in progress. It's one more thing that Schmaltz can put on the list of, you know, what sophomores need to learn in this league.
Right.
But, it's going to be something you've seen Perreault out there the last couple of days. I mean, they're going to be working on it.
Yeah, so I think you and I are going to be focused, as most Hawks fans, on DeBrincat. Is he ready for the NHL? And let's see how things play out here over the next 2 weeks. As for the vacated left wing spot, Artemi Panarin spoke to the Chicago media in Columbus on Tuesday night. And again, you know, I loved my time with that kid. I thought he was a lot of fun. He had a great infectious personality, even though we couldn't speak Russian and supposedly he couldn't speak English, although that
lies,
might be,
all lies.
Yeah, all lies. but I did find a few things he said very interesting. This is a business, baby. And to me, he was asked whether or not he communicated with Patrick Kane.
Mm-hmm.
And he said no. Now, I talked to Patrick earlier this summer, and Patrick said, I tried to text him.
Yeah.
Now, he said there's two different phones that he had been using in the previous 2 years. You know, one that is adaptable in the U.S. and one that is probably his primary Russian phone. Mm-hmm. So he didn't know if actually it had gotten through.
Yeah.
I believe, in my heart of hearts, he went up to his agent and said, tell him I love him. It was something like that.
I talked to his agent
at the draft. So, I mean, like, I know this killed Patrick for him to leave. It hurt big time.
Yeah.
But I thought he was throwing that Panarin was throwing a little bit of shade on Tuesday by using that this is business, baby, which is, you know, this is hockey, baby. That's Kane's line. And then the quote, you know, he's going to be able to play more with the puck in Columbus and express himself more. Now, I don't know how much more he could express himself at being on the most explosive line in the NHL and winning Rookie of the Year and the other guy winning MVP, but okay, I'll give you that. Yeah. What was your take on what you kind of saw from Panarin in Columbus?
Yeah, I wish I had been there. I really wish I had been there. And I talked to Mark Lazarus about that because he was there. Chris Hine was there. And no cameras were allowed to talk to Panarin. You know, it was they just gave this to the reporters, which was very cool. And part of that probably was, you know, he is speaking better English, according to Laz, and I'll take his word for it. But still, when you're dealing with language barriers and stuff like that in front of cameras, it gets tough. knowing what I do of Panarin and that sneaky little attitude he has, I'm sure he was having some fun.
Yeah.
With Kane. And the other thing, when you were talking about him trying to get in touch with him, how many fishing trips was Panarin on this summer? When he, you know, when he got traded, he was on a fishing trip. And then right. He was about to go, you know. But I did talk to his agent not long after the trade, and that was one of the first things that he told me, was that he said, you know, tell Patrick that I love him, and you know, and vice versa. So those two, I wish he would make the trip here tomorrow. I doubt that he will. Just to watch those two in action. But I'm going to take it, not having been there, not knowing the context, I'm going to take it as him just having a little fun with his ex-teammate.
All right. Well, we'll find out, indeed,
soon,
where the
Brett regular
man
season,
is
what is the second game?
Yeah.
So we'll find out
we'll
soon
find
enough,
out there.
Yes.
The third line for now, Anisimov, Sharp, and Ryan Hartman. Mm-hmm. And, I think all bets are off for the fourth line. Did you like what you saw from John Hayden? Out there on Tuesday night.
Very much, yeah. And he's another kid who's had a very good camp. And when you were talking earlier about some of these young guys and, you know, feeling much better. And Hayden came in at the end.
Right.
But he had an extra year of college. But you could see the confidence in him, too. You know, just getting the small sample that he did last spring, he knew what he had to work on. He worked a lot with, I think his name is Ben Prentice, I apologize if I get that wrong, who's worked with a lot of NHL guys on his training this summer, is working on his speed and everything. But even that small sample gave him an idea of what he needed to do, and he's applied it early on. And the roster decisions are going to be tough because you have so many one-way deals that were signed on July 1st. I think you need a Hayden off the top more than DeBrincat before people start throwing things. You know, the bottom six is up in the air, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get a young kid on there who's got the size, got a little bit of speed to him, has got a great shot and everything, you need to bolster that bottom six. And I think he'd be very good in that respect.
Yeah. And you know, we talked on previous podcasts. It was something that Kane brought up to me back in, I think it was early August. When he said, you know, too many times last year we talked about the core guys and the young guys.
Yeah.
We need to become a team. And they're going to work on that. Part of this South Bend experience is to bond as a team. Yeah. They're going to have an off day there. It's my understanding, you know, they've got some activities planned. I think there's a team golf function where, like, nobody else from I don't even know if the coaches are going to be, but it's going to be a bonding type situation for this team. And I think John Hayden, now he was the captain at Yale. I think someone told me that they look at him as that guy that's going to help meld the young guys to, you know, the established Seabrooks, Keiths, Kane, and Taves and those guys. So, like, maybe in like a diplomacy situation, this guy's going to be that guy that kind of helps bring the locker room together and unite them.
I think he'd be a good candidate for that. He's kind of young Taves in that leadership capacity. And like you said, it helps that this kid is coming off a four-year career at an Ivy League school. I mean, this is a very smart guy on and off the ice.
Yep.
You know, and so he's going to be Switzerland, I guess, in the relations of the two factions. And, you know, going back to what Kane said about bridging the gap, I think part of that, I think the young guys on the ice last year were very much part of this team because you looked at how some of them were very key components to the success. But, yeah, I think even attitude-wise, I think that'll be more evident that it'll be a tighter-knit group this year because – like Hartman was saying, like Schmaltz was saying, you walk in just kind of, oh my God, I'm you know, this first year kid in a room full of people who've won two or three cups apiece. It can be a little daunting.
Sure.
And so I'm sure a lot of them were kind of, all right, I'm going to be hesitant to say something or whatever. I think some of that just wears off also with the experience. And so it will be a tighter group and more meshed and not young and veteran.
Defensively, I think that's probably the one area that I have my biggest concern with this team. Obviously, with TVR gone, Hjalmarsson gone, you can say Oduya. But, you know, Connor Murphy in the mix now. Mm-hmm. We saw Michael Kempney Cody Franzen and Jan Rutta. Yeah. Your thoughts on what you've seen defensively here in the first week in a very, you know, again, limited sample size?
With Keith and Murphy, they've been working together. And again, I'm curious to see them in the game. I'm sure that Thursday night is going to be that option. I liked what I saw from Rutta on Tuesday night. And Joel, when I asked him about Rutta the other day, and Pat Foley alluded to the quote last night in terms of Q said, you know, sometimes you have a defenseman out there and he's not doing anything flashy. And you think, oh, he's not doing anything. Not true. He's just quietly going about his business. And that's where the category he was putting Rutta in. Very confident kid. Not kid, 27, sorry.
Right.
But he's very calm, very poised. He's not going to be overextending himself. He's just out there being smart. And so right now, I think he's been doing very well. I think Coach Quenneville likes him a lot. So I think he's off to a very good start. Yeah, I'm curious with everything else. You know, who does Seabrook mesh with? France and that heavy shot, you know, we saw it last night in the game. You need that.
Right.
You're going to need that, and especially with this need for right-handed defensemen.
I just worry about the speed factor. You know, like that's one thing we walked out of that Nashville series. And again, we don't want to overreact too much.
Right.
But I think if we, even though I know they had the most points in the West, foot speed on the back end would have been an area of concern when they played fast teams.
Yeah.
And obviously Cody Franzen is not going to upgrade you in the speed department.
Not there. You know, he gives you another veteran.
Sure.
You know, this is where some of the kids need to, sorry, I keep calling them kids. They're half my age. That's what I'm calling them. Forsling, you know, who came out of camp so good last year and then kind of plateaued early, and that was the end of it. He needs to build off of those levels. Kempney getting more of an opportunity. You know, we'll see if, I don't know if Gustafson is going to have a shot in here. We also have to factor in, you know, the spot that you thought that Michael Roosevelt was just going to take because he was signed last year. He didn't pass his physical.
Yeah.
Upper body injury is what Quenneville told us. We don't know if it's the hit he took last year in the Anaheim game at the end of the year where I think he suffered a concussion in that fight. We don't know if it's that. He wouldn't specify.
Right.
But if he ends up, you know, I don't know how all that works. If you end up being able to just cut him because he didn't pass, then that opens up a spot even for a seventh guy who might rotate in.
Sure.
I don't know if they're going to go with eight because that ends up being such a mess.
Right.
They don't rotate enough guys in, and this is still a pretty young group.
It depends too. Is Cody Franzen the eighth or seventh? And,
right.
You know, like if it's one of those guys, you can live with it.
Sure.
But it's not going to be, you know, Svedberg or somebody that you want. It's not going to be a young guy that is sitting in the press box every second or third game.
No, because that's the problem they got into last year was that some of these young guys were sitting way too much, and that's not going to do them a bit of good.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't miss Subaru White Sox postgame live with Chuck Garfine and Bill Melton. Hear from your favorite players and get a live look inside Rick Renteria's postgame press conferences. Subaru White Sox postgame live after every Sox game on CSN.
So, you know what, I was kind of wondering how this whole coaching thing was going to work out, and I'm sitting there watching practice today, and you know, now you've got Ulf Samuelsson, Donnie Granato, Kevin Dineen, of course, is back.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Jimmy Waite, you know, back as the goalie coach, and Matt Meacham does the video coaching. I kind of thought to myself, you know what, more coaches, more better. Like, I don't think this is a bad thing. I wondered if there were too many, you know, cooks in the kitchen, and is this guy in Stan's camp, and is this guy in Joel's camp? At the end of the day, you know, Joel's signed off on all these guys, and I think it's going to be good to have different perspective and just a different way of going about doing your business. Your thoughts on just what you've seen.
I agree. You know, when we first heard that there might be a third coach, you know, when you first hear that, you're thinking, okay, Mole. But the person they choose in Granato, this is a guy from Joel's past.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't some guy that, you know, just he and Bowman were college friends and we're bringing him in or anything like that. All of these guys have a connection to Joel. Now, Jimmy Waite, is kind of off on his, you know, Joel talks about it all the time with anytime you ever ask a question about weight or the goalies and everything, like that's Jimmy's job.
Yeah.
They're on their own little island and he keeps about his business. I don't think this is going to be a bad thing, you know, because of the relationship that all of these guys have, be it their time in Hartford as players, you know, it started there.
The Whaler Mafia.
With the three of them, yes. And God, I keep saying, can't we get the theme song for just one game? That's all I'm asking. When they introduce the coaches at opening night.
Yeah, that would be nice. I like that touch.
Just come on. Just all play right, Brass Bonanza.
We'll talk to their in-game.
Please.
Their in-game crew and see if they can get that for you. That would be a nice touch.
But I think it was as much what personnel you were going to bring in more than just how many it was going to be.
Right.
You know, to say you're having three coaches after only having two, you're thinking, okay. Then you look at who it is and the connection with Joel and everything, and it makes more sense.
And realize
now.
That probably a third of the teams do have three coaches.
Like, probably.
Yeah, I think that was the number Eddie Olczyk had told me. You know, we named him offhand as you went through it. I think it's around 11 teams that have that. So, you know, not totally
it was new for here.
Foreign. It was new for here, exactly. Yeah. And like we were saying, you know, why mess with success? But again, 2-1 and duns, things are going to change.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter what line of work you're in, including the line of work we're in.
Yeah.
You mentioned Jimmy Waite and the goaltending situation. You know, Anton Forsberg, a part of the Panarin-Saad deal.
Yeah.
And knowing that Darling was exiting stage right, that was a key component to that trade, was it not?
Oh, totally. It didn't hurt that his first opportunity was in a building that he knows.
Sure.
But at the same time, I mean, how long into that game before the first 5-on-4 and then a 5-on-3?
And
you know, the penalty situation was insane. And most goalies you talked to, most of them, I know this is true with Corey Crawford, it seemed to be true with Scott Darling based on his body of work, the more they're active off the top, the more they seem to get into a game and stay in it, stay engaged the entire time. And I think you saw that with him on Tuesday night. I thought he was fantastic in the first period. I mean, just stellar. And he was busy.
Yeah. So. And on the flip side, I thought Columbus netminder, I'm like, was shaky at best, looked like a beer league goalie. And I'm like, well, that's what it could have. That could have been, you know, one of the revolving doors. And, you know, let's be honest, Scotty Darling, I think he won 20 games over the last two seasons for
something
this
like
team.
That,
something in that area. Of course, you know, both of those seasons, Corey went on the shelf for an extended period of time. The appendectomy last year, the ankle foot injury year prior. Mm-hmm. And did they lean on him? I mean, he started, you know, like 11 consecutive games, including two back-to-backs.
Yeah.
So, like, that's an important part. In a ultra, uber-competitive division and conference where every point is at a premium, you know, we've yet to see Corey have a slump, and you need to have that solid backup. We've had it here, you know, basically since 2013, and now it's going to be interesting to see if Forsberg continues that trend of a great backup to the number one.
He's following Darling and Ronta on the line of not a whole heck of a lot of experience coming in.
Right.
You know, so it's not necessarily about that, because Ronta's perfectly fine. He's got a starting gig now in Arizona now, and Darling down in Carolina. You know, no NHL experience. So, you know, I like what I saw last night. It's an excellent start. Joel liked what he saw last night. But they absolutely are going to need him. I'm trying to think. I think every year Crawford has been sidelined with something, at least going back to 13-14, at least.
Yeah.
There's been something.
There has been something.
So, you know, this is something that is absolutely necessary. He's not getting any younger. And if he averages an injury a year, you're going to have to get somebody that you can rely on. And it's worked out very well for him. And you would question somebody rolling the dice on somebody with no experience if it hadn't worked two previous times. But it has. They have been on a tremendous roll on this lately. And so until it fails, hey, they might have just found another one here. But small sample size, but it's a good start.
To set the table for everybody, Thursday, September 21st, the Hawks take on the Detroit Red Wings at the United Center. Friday is an off day for the team. They will play Columbus at the United Center on Saturday. And then this is the new wrinkle. Training camp goes to Notre Dame on Sunday. Well, they'll have practice in South Bend. And there's a game the following day, so I think the youngsters will depart and the core group and probably the guys that, you know, we expect to see make this team, or at least that are really close to, you know, being between Rockford and Chicago, that group will stay assembled. And to me, it's going to be a bonding opportunity, and that's something that they want to bring this unit together.
They like to do that. I think last year most of the veterans got bonding opportunity because they were all up in Toronto for the World Cup.
Sure.
I mean, really, they were all up there. They love the Notre Dame experience, a little different this year. I think it will allow more off-ice bonding time because, you know, the last couple of years that they have done this, it's been the first week of training camp. It's been a ton of practice and meetings and everything. And so I think there will be more emphasis. The roster will be cut down a little bit more by next week, and so practices will be shorter. They'll be more intense. They'll be more focused, and they'll have more time off the ice to just kind of kick back, relax. They won't have the distractions at home. So it's like their mini circus trip without the snow in Western Canada. So, yeah, it should have the desired effect.
Cubs Postgame Live, sponsored by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. With David Kaplan and David DeJesus, hear from Cubs players inside the locker room. Get a live look inside Joe Maddon's post-game press conferences and more.
All right, Tracy Meyer's to-do list here over the next couple days. Are you going to be on DeBrincat watch and then like fourth, fifth, sixth defenseman kind of watch? Is that am I sensing that vibe?
That's kind of where we're at right now. I'm very. I want to see. I want to see what this is. You know, I've said what I think they should do. It's what they probably still will end up doing. But I do want to see this. I want to see this combination.
Awesome. So. Thanks, as always. Look forward
to
the next 14 dozen of these that we end up doing between now and the end of the season. Coming up on our next podcast, we heard Pat Foley talk about it on the broadcast last night on CSN. We will give you an update on Eddie Olczyk. Basically what Pat said, I think was perfect. Edzo in a battle. He appreciates all the kind words, the prayers, the well wishes that Blackhawks fans are sending him, that just Chicago fans are sending him. He told me the other day that, you know, when he goes for the chemotherapy treatments, you know, he sees and people come up to him and they, you know, they want to share their story, so keep it up, and we'll continue to update you on our good friend Eddie Olczyk as we continue on the Hawks podcast in upcoming episodes. That's going to do it for this one. Thanks, as always, for listening, everybody. For Tracy Meyers, I'm Pat Boyle. Go Hawks, and we'll catch you next time on the Hawks Talk podcast.